Hey everybody, what's going on? I'm Rob Fate. Welcome to another edition of Sports Bar Radio. We are going to get a lot of stuff in over the next 30 minutes, so I hope I find you well and rested from the weekend. As, yeah, I plan on talking about a lot of different things, everything. We'll delve into politics very briefly, I might add. A very big week back east, and I want to know what you think of your politicians. What do you want from a politician? I'm not necessarily talking about policy, but what do you want that politician to look like? Do you want them to be clean cut? Do you want them to be a hippie? Do you want them to have a heavy fist? Or do you want them to be the person that can shake hands, kiss babies, and do the deuce? So we're going to talk about what a politician looks like. And I'm not using this as an aesthetic conversation, but just, you know, representing your country, representing your community. What do you look for when it comes to your leader from within? As well, we're going to talk about sports. Actually, this is probably where I'll start, considering it is called Sports Bar Radio. And the topic du jour is the Toronto Blue Jays and the manager, John Schneider. Now, full disclosure, I am a friend of John Schneider. So as you listen to my thoughts over the next couple of minutes, please do keep that in mind, because it has been really hard over the last couple of weeks to watch social media just absolutely hammer John Schneider for every loss that the Toronto Blue Jays accumulate. And it makes me think over the years, having been in this broadcast industry for, gosh, man, what's 95? So you're talking nearly 30 years now. It is almost eye-opening to think of how many times I have taken a coach or a manager to task, and now all of a sudden I get to wear the shoe on the other foot, where I get a little offended when I see said coach or manager being taken back to the woodshed. You know these guys. They're your friends. They're people that you've introduced your family to. And all of a sudden you go on social media and they're just getting berated by guys that are hiding behind their aliases, ladies that are hiding behind their aliases. And it's a little tough to watch. And the only reason that I bring this up in particular is you see the Blue Jays, who as of this podcast are 7 games above 500. They've got more wins than 10 of the 15 teams in the American League, and yet everybody is calling for John Schneider's head. But you look at the American League East right now, and Tampa got off to this ungodly start, so they're well above the pack. Baltimore, after years and years of being brutal, have finally gotten their first picks to click. They're getting everything together. They're a formidable foe as well. And all of a sudden, that American League East sees the Blue Jays in fourth, scuffling around with the Yankees and Red Sox. But I would like to think that when you have your Cy Young guy from last year, at least in the conversation, Alec Manoah in the minors, Hyun-Jun Ryu is recovering from Tommy John, and really you're looking at guys like Yusei Kikuchi, Jose Barrios, and thank God for Kevin Gausman. Aside from that, you're really taping together your starting rotation in the toughest division in baseball. And yet the Blue Jay fan base needs a kick the dog guy. And it happens this year to be John Schneider, as it was 2 years ago with Charlie Montoyo, as it's been over the last 20 years with insert manager's name here. Not everybody's going to be likable like John Gibbons, but let's not forget something about John Gibbons. That yes, he took the Blue Jays to the postseason, which I guess gets you a get out of jail for life card. He wasn't the greatest manager in Blue Jay history either. But I think what it is social media and the immediacy of social media. Used to be you'd have a couple of guys in the newspaper that would bring it up, or dare we say a sports radio show once a night that would reflect on the game that was, and every once in a while they would take a manager to task. Now, it is just a waterfall of opinion that is instantaneous, that doesn't take things into consideration, and also, I would even go as far to say, look at the wrong analytic at times to make their decision on why a coach is floundering. For example, they'll always say, well, you left a pitcher in for a batter too long, or you took about a pitch too early, or this, that. You are never going to be perfect as a manager. But let me just say one thing. And again, full disclosure, I am close to the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, so I'm not saying this completely in defense. I say this from 14 years of broadcasting baseball and watching every pitch of every inning of every game as well. How they manage at the major league levels is not like the old days. It's not like Billy Martin. It's not even like Cito, where you'd be able to sit there and just have a thought, an epiphany, and go off a gut feeling. You have teams of people that are helping you make decisions, quote unquote helping you make decisions. When it's right, you look like a genius. And when it's wrong, you're the boob. But don't think for a second that John Schneider is in it all by himself making these decisions. It's not just him, Pete Walker, Don Mattingly, and Guillermo Martinez. It is the people in the back. It is the people upstairs. It's the people on their iPads. It's the people that 3 days before that series even started gave you the advanced scouting, the analytic. It is a laundry list of people that are in on decisions like that. So now all of a sudden, fast forward to a decision where you decide that you want to take a pitcher out, or you see him at a certain pitch count, or you think that this guy might be better against left-handed hitters, and he ends up not being, and he goes 0 for 4. And who does that travel to? Well, it all falls back on the manager, John Schneider. But I would like to think that what he did at the minor league level, where they have far less reins, showed him to be a formidable manager. And I don't think the game has sped up too fast for him. If anything, I think there's too many cooks in the kitchen. I think there's too many chefs right now that want to get their ingredients into the recipe. I'd also like to think that maybe people need to start refocusing their attention on Ross Atkins. Ross has been able to skate for a number of years now. Since Alex Anthopoulos decided to take his trade elsewhere, Ross Atkins has come in. He's had a couple of managerial changes. He's been able to overturn this team not once but twice, and might have to a third time. But how long before people realize that he has only given John Schneider so many tools to build this house? And you can't keep hanging your hat on Vladdy and Bo as being the reason that we should be in the World Series. As you've seen from several World Series champions, you got to build a team. I've had this conversation a number of times, and I won't spend too much time on it. I'll wrap it up here. You can't build a baseball team with three A's and a bunch of C minuses and D's. You have to have a number of guys, and even if you don't have a megastar, like a Fernando Tatis or a Shohei Ohtani, which, by the way, I'm going to talk about in a second here, you've got to have stability, and you've got to have depth. And right now, if Kevin Biggio is your depth, that's a problem. But that's a general manager problem. That's not a John Schneider problem. So, yeah, do I think John Schneider makes it to the end of the season? I hope so, because I would be furious as a Blue Jay fan, not even a friend of John, but furious as a Blue Jay fan if you banged your coach, who was above 500 in the toughest division of baseball, revered by his players, because you were getting pressure from the fan base, because you're not leading that division, which, again, and I'll say it for a third time, is the toughest division in baseball, and it's not even close. So again, I hope that the Blue Jays can find their stride here in the month of July. I feel like they've still got a great opportunity. They're going to get in as a wild card team, but they're going to get in, and then you let the chips fall where they may. Okay, very quickly, Shohei Ohtani. ESPN put up a graphic the other day that showed what a potential trade between the Los Angeles Angels and the New York Mets could be, which would send Shohei Ohtani to the Bronx. Well, actually, not the Bronx. It would send him to New York. The Angels have been very good to their fan base. If you think back to Pujols, if you think back to the numbers that they've given to Mike Trout, the big numbers, the contracts that they've given out over the past 10 to 15 years, they have always been able to go out and get their guy, Anthony Rendon. But I know the number for Shohei is going to be astronomical. It should be the biggest contract in baseball history. It should. Like, name another player that is worth more to their team or worth more to the game than Shohei Ohtani right now. You can't find a player that is more well-rounded, that could bring more value to their team. And that's before you get into the marketing. So if I'm Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, I'm frothing at the mouth to try and make this deal happen. But if I'm the Angels, the second you trade Ohtani, you're done with your fan base. Even with all of the goodwill over the last 5, 10, 15 years, you going out and playing hardball to get those big free agents, you have a generational player. You have, I don't want to call him the Wayne Gretzky of the sport, but he is iconic. What Shohei Ohtani is doing, and it's not just 1 year flash in the pan. He's not a Hideo Nomo that hangs around for 2 or 3 years and then all of a sudden falls off the grid. Shohei Ohtani is one of the best hitters in baseball, who just happens to be one of the best pitchers in baseball. You trade him and it's over. But if I'm the Mets, I am doing whatever it takes. If I'm Steve Cohen, I am backing up the Brinks truck to kit the other Brinks truck to make sure that I can somehow, he would immediately, with the addition of Shohei Ohtani, go right past the Yankees in the chain of importance in sports in New York City. They would immediately become the biggest show in town. Could you imagine having both Aaron Judge and Shohei in the same city, but for opposing teams? And yes, I know what you're saying. They'll never be the Yankees. I promise you, if the Mets were to go out and get Shohei Ohtani, they would be the talk in New York. As great as Aaron Judge is, as majestic as the New York Yankees are, as second rate as the Mets have always been to the New York Yankees, give or take a couple of World Series seasons, this would be the thing that Steve Cohen could do to put his team at the top of the mountain, at the top of the heap in New York. Think it happens? Hit me up on Twitter, at Rob Fay, R-O-B, F as in Frank, A-I. All right, when we come back, and again, it's just a real quick musical interlude to reset your mental mechanism. When we come back, schools here in the province of British Columbia, younger than, I guess, grades 10, 11, and 12, have decided to get rid of the grading system. No more A's or B's, no C's, D's, or F's. It is simply he's getting it or he's not getting it. As a parent, what do you think of this? And why? I'm okay with this. A new leaf for the old guy. I'll tell you why it's okay by me. You're listening to Sports Bar Radio, presented to you as always by Equity Guru. Okay, so if you're old enough to remember the letter grades and the strain that came with wondering if you were going to get an A, a B, a C, a D, or heaven forbid, and I can raise my hand to this, getting the occasional F, you know the stress that came with it. All students from kindergarten through grade 9 in British Columbia, as of next year, the next school year that starts in September, will no longer get A's, B's, C's, D's, or F's if you're in grades 10, 11, or 12, because now the education ministry in British Columbia is going to be going to a proficiency scale instead of letter grades. Now, about half of BC students have already been getting the new progress reports. It was a pilot program that started back in 2016. The ministry says the proficiency scale report cards use terms such as emerging, developing, proficient, and extending to describe student learning assessments that are supplemented with teachers' comments. So again, instead of just getting a B and it is what it is, now you're going to get a, hey, he's on his way to getting there, or he's doing really good at this, and then you're going to get further dialogue from the teacher. BC Teacher Federation President Clint Johnson says, quote, "I think this is a way of getting across a better message of how a child is moving through the educational journey," unquote. It has gotten a huge amount of blowback from parents that are like, no. I want the A, the B, the C, so I know how my kid is doing. But I would challenge that thought. As a guy that struggled in school, and I'm going to, you know, kind of let you know what's going on, I really struggled in grades 9, 10, well, heck, let's just put it all through high school. And one of the biggest challenges that I faced was the fear of bringing home a bad report card. And it's not because I thought my parents were going to do wrong by me. It was just because I knew that I was struggling in school, and this was just huge affirmation in a very vague way to say that I was struggling. Well, he's getting an F. Well, how come? It's an F. And if you go to the parent-teacher interview, then maybe, just maybe, you'll get a little bit of information and try to help you there. But it was just so black and white. It was so, here it is, and just wear it, and by the way, try to get better next semester. What the BC school system is trying to do is say, listen, your kid is struggling, or you know what, your kid's doing okay, or hey, your kid really gets this, and here's why. So the old regime is going to be like, no, I know if my kid's getting an A, he's doing really well, and if my kid's getting a D or an F, I know they're really struggling. Same thing, but with more information, is what British Columbia is trying to get across here. They are saying that the proficiency scale can help assess the depth of a student understanding, what they're learning, and especially when it comes to things like math and English. I would say math, of all of the different things that we learn, is the one that is often viewed as something that is the most absolute. You either get it or you don't. But we never really find out where our students kind of lost their path, lost their way. So if me, as a parent, has the opportunity to get more information to see where my child fell off the track or why they're excelling in this particular course, that is more information, that's more data, that's more opportunity for me to become a better parent and to help my kid through school. Telling me that my kid got a C? I don't know, is C good, is C bad? How are you grading my kid? Whereas now, I actually think this pilot project went quite well. And even though there's going to be some training, which still needs to be provided during work hours so all these teachers can get on the same page, I would like to think that this is going to long-term benefit. This isn't woke. This isn't us trying to overthink the process. This is trying to get from an archaic system to something that is communicating better to parents. I actually think it's a good thing. The Education Minister, Rachna Singh, said report cards will continue to update parents about their child's progress, but they're also trying to prepare their students to succeed. So again, grades 10, 11, and 12, you will still get your A's, B's, and C's. But if you're in elementary school, if you're in junior high, you are going to get more information as a parent. You're going to get more information as a student as to what your teacher's thinking about you as well. And I just think this is something that actually has a huge amount of advantage once you get past that mental barrier of the fact that change is not just on its way, it is now here. I'd love to know what you think on this. Hit me up on Twitter at Rob Fay, R-O-B, F as in Frank, A-I, and let us continue the conversation there. Okay, let's switch gears. We've talked sports. We've talked about what's going on with the BC school system. I want to talk a little politics. It's a very big week back east in Toronto as they're going to decide who their next mayor is. Former disgraced mayor John Tory moving to the side. So somebody new is going to be stepping into that big chair in City Hall. And even though it's in Toronto and many of you are listening here on the West Coast, question for you. When it comes to your politician, the one that represents your jurisdiction or your community, or dare we say your province, what do you look for? And I'm not talking politic here. I come from a city of Port Coquitlam recently. That's where I previously lived before I just recently moved to Pitt Meadows. And our mayor was Brad West. Very progressive, young, likable, not afraid to go toe-to-toe on social media. There's a lot of people that think Brad West has a bigger portfolio on his horizon. But what is it about Brad West that people in Port Coquitlam like? So much so that in the last election, nobody even ran against him. And why do people struggle with their mayors or their politicians? Is it optical? Is there something that you look for from your mayor before you cast your vote? I'm Rob Fay, and you're listening to Sports Bar Radio. I just want to use your love tonight. I don't want to lose your love tonight. All right, final segment of Sports Bar Radio. Thank you to everybody at Equity Guru for making moments like this possible, where I can post this podcast and get the support from those behind me to make sure that we can continue to do things like this. So what makes a good politician? And this is before I get into my actual question, and what do you want from a mayor? A lot of people would say, when it comes to being a good politician, a mayor, for example, you want to have good leadership skills, you want to have good communication skills, you want to have good problem-solving skills, and you also, of course, want to have a little bit of integrity. When it comes to politicians, and I'm going to give you a wide variety of politicians, and this is where we're going to try to put some meat on the bone here. What do you look for when it comes to a candidate? What do you look for when it comes to somebody who represents your country, your province, or dare we say even your neighborhood? Justin Trudeau right now is obviously being dragged through the coals. Now, I will tell you this full stop. I am not getting into the politic of it all. But why Justin Trudeau captured the imagination of Canadians nearly a decade ago was because not just his father being Pierre Elliott Trudeau, but because he was young, he was vibrant, he was fresh, he had a message, and yes, there was a little lineage as well that I think a lot of Canadians fell in love with. As he has progressed through this decade, even though he is still the same person, people look at him through a different lens because of the politic. You look at somebody like Pierre Poilievre, who is making progress within the Conservative Party, and it's not just because of his tough talk and his ability to debate the best of them on Parliament Hill. It is because there is an optic to Pierre Poilievre. He's clean cut. He looks like he knows what he's talking about. And there is a faction of Canadians that will swear by Pierre Poilievre for the way that he articulates and the way that he comes across as an aggressor against Justin Trudeau. People like that. And I don't think that the Conservative government had that previously, dating back maybe even just to Stephen Harper, who again, at the beginning of his term, was pretty liked by Canadians. Jack Layton. Even though he never became prime minister of this country, everybody thought of him as Canada's dad because he had this likability to him. And even though nobody got down with the NDP politic, there was something about Jack Layton that Canadians connected with. When it comes to local politics, for example, you think of the mayor of Vancouver and the number that we've had. Kennedy Stewart had not a lot of likability to him. You think of Sam Sullivan. There was a likability to him. And to be honest, having Sam Sullivan in the mayor's chair, he had some physical challenges. We looked beyond that and we looked at him as a leader and as a man that could get things done. That to me is the question that I'm asking of you right now, is what do you look for from your politician? Let's put the politics aside, which I know you can't completely do, but what do you want from the person that represents your community? Before the break, I told you that Brad West in Port Coquitlam is getting rave reviews right now, and not just within his community. A lot of people are starting to perk up their ears and ask, who is this Brad West guy? Then you think of Ken Sim in Vancouver and what he's been able to do in his brief time as the mayor of Vancouver. And you also think of what's going on with Brenda Locke, for example, in Surrey, and how there's this vitriol around her and everything that she's struggling with when it comes to the Surrey Police Service or the RCMP. And you wonder if she's being taken serious because of who she is and the place where she's doing her politicking. I would like to think, when it comes to a person that represents my community, I want somebody who's not afraid to go toe-to-toe. I would like to think that, optics aside, I want somebody that's got some integrity, that's not afraid to collaborate, that's a visionary. Those things are really important to me, and to even have a little empathy. I think empathy is actually a lost art, and whoever can show that to me first is usually going to be the person that gets my vote. And that's not because I'm getting softer in my old age, but I think it's a skill that can really help you accomplish a lot of things in your city, your community, your province, your country. So I mentioned early on leadership skills, communication skills, problem-solving skills, integrity. Those were the four things that I matched. Those are a lot of internal skills. But when I see a politician that I want representing me, fiscal, I can physically see it. I can look down on the spreadsheet and see if they're doing well by my community. A visionary, are you willing to open up community centers? Are you willing to go into the places that politicians don't usually like to go? Are you going to the gay pride parade because you know that that's a box as a politician that you need to check? Or do you truly want to do good by that community? Can you collaborate? Can you bring both sides of the table together and get something done? I can see that. I can physically watch you do that. That's really important to me. And empathy. Are you good with those in the community who are less fortunate? And can you help them get out of the situation they're in and onto the right path? That is something that I can also see from a politician. The reason I ask this question is back east. They're looking for the next mayor of Toronto. I happen to be filling in on a radio station, 640 Toronto, and I was interviewing all of these different mayoral candidates. And it was really interesting to me to hear how everybody had their tough talk, had their engaging stances, but nobody really came across as genuine. Not one. Which was surprising to me because I know that there's good people in that race, but when they got behind the microphone and they started to talk and they had to get, you know, all of their stuff in their 7 to 8 minutes, nobody could step away from their bullet points. And that to me was really, really surprising. Because I was a substitute teacher. I'm not the regular host. If anything, I'm the person that as a politician, you should be locked in on saying, this is the guy that's not going to rake me across the coals. I'm going to get to show a human side with this guy. Because I wasn't trying to hit a home run as the fill-in host. I was just trying to bridge the gap until the guy that I was filling in for got back off his vacation. It was a golden opportunity. And nobody took me up on that. And I even ask questions like, hey, what's on your iPod right now? What music are you listening to? Or you've talked tough about this, but walk me through this. Why does it matter to you so much? And whether it was former police chief Mark Saunders, a number of the politicians that were already within City Hall that were now trying to get the biggest chair within that building, or somebody off the streets that was trying to do something good, a former media guy in Anthony Fury, none of them could come across as genuine. Like, let me put it to you this way. None of them would have earned my vote after having the 7 to 8 minute conversation with them. If anything, Anthony Fury, who is a former TV guy who should know how to work the media, came across as probably one of the most disingenuine. Because even though he could deliver it as far as on the radio or what he can do in front of the camera, when they had their town hall and he finally got to go on TV and state his case, he came across as plastic. He came across as phony. And I just couldn't believe the missed opportunity there. Because again, what I look for from a politician is authenticity. Does he look like a regular Joe? Does he look like the kind of person, be they a he, a her, however they identify? Are they genuine? Are they authentic? Are they going to be able to collaborate? Are they a visionary? And you know what? I don't know who's going to be the next mayor of that city. It should be Olivia Chow, just based on the analytic, the numbers, and how big her lead is. Again, the former wife of Jack Layton. I couldn't believe how unimpressed I was by all of those candidates. Now, you know, I was also hosting the Sun Run not too long ago, and I had a chance to sit down with Ken Sim, the mayor of Vancouver. No microphone, just me getting ready for the event that I was going to be emceeing, and Ken Sim, who was going to run a couple of kilometers in the race before peeling off. Ken Sim came across as genuine. Ken Sim sat down at the table and proactively asked me how my day was going and what do I do? What's my story? So I told him about wrestling, told him about how I was in sports media. It kind of chewed me up, spit me out. So the next thing you know, I was doing wrestling with my buddy Chris and we were having some struggles getting some venues. He listened. We had a conversation. He told me about wrestling when he was a kid and some of the, you know, matches that he remembered. And all of a sudden, I found myself thinking, you know what? He's not politicking me. He's telling me a story. And I was really engaged with that. And not just because all of a sudden he was speaking to something, and not just because he was speaking to something that was near and dear to me, but he wasn't giving me the spiel. He wasn't giving me the business. And that's what would have gotten my vote in that moment. So I guess I bring this whole conversation up just because, you know, again, it was, you know, right in front of my face when I was filling in back east. But it made me think, what do I want in my politician who can represent me? Because those people in Toronto, taxes aside and infrastructure aside and all the things that everybody's going on hard about right now in the final hours before that vote, I think there's going to be a lot of undecided voters that just aren't sure if that person is really going to represent them. They'll go back to the politics. But you know where you can win so many votes? Be real. It counts for something. It's why Brad West is doing such big things right now in a small jurisdiction on the east side of the Lower Mainland. It's why Brenda Locke right now is just getting hammered relentlessly in Surrey because she's not likable. And I don't think this has anything to do with her being a woman. I don't think it's... I will say this, and this is one of my final thoughts here before we wrap it up. I think the media is doing her dirty. Every picture that they use of Brenda Locke when they put, you know, stuff on Twitter or stuff on, you know, the websites, awful pictures of Brenda Locke. Like, they're not using her good side, for lack of a better phrase. They're making her look like a Karen. And that, to me, is unfair. Like, that's on the editors. That's editorial. You can get a better picture. You can get a stock photo and show her in a positive light as being progressive, as at least putting up the fight. Every photo that they use of Brenda Locke is a side shot where she's yelling at somebody or in disarray. And to be honest, I see it. Maybe not everybody sees it, but I see what they're doing. And it's pretty unfortunate that way. But anyways, to get back to this, I think right now likability is key. Likability is king. And if I'm a politician, I take a page out of sports and see how they do it, because nothing's better than an athlete that understands how to work the room. And I think politicians could take some big pages from that. All right, let's put a big bow on the show, shall we? We talked a little bit about the Toronto Blue Jays. We talked about the grading system here in our province of British Columbia and how it's going to be changing for many parents in the elementary school system as their kid comes home no longer with A, Bs, or Cs. They're coming up with basically they're on their way, they're struggling, or they're doing great. And then there's going to be some teacher comments on that. And what do you look for from a politician? I'm Rob Fay. Hit me up on Twitter at Rob Fay, R-O-B, F as in Frank, A-I. I'd love to continue this conversation with you. Until you and I do this again, thanks to everybody at Equity Guru, to Chris Perry, to Galen, to Daria, and everybody who has had a hand in getting this up onto the air or onto the social media world. I'm Rob Fay. Let's do this again soon. You've been listening to Sports Bar Radio, presented to you as always by Equity Guru. Shitano